Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Hey y'all, welcome to my brand new podcast, Huey Off the Record. I'm excited about this new chapter and this new venture because it's a place for me to have the conversations I want to have with the people I want to have them with. You know, without tooting my own horn, I feel I have a unique perspective on a few things. I've been a U.S. Marine. I've toured the world and sold out stadiums with my band Fun Loving Criminals. I'm a broadcaster, an author, and now a family man too. And through all of it, I've seen some weird and wild things and met some crazy, interesting, cool people. I've seen a lot of the world, and I want to use this podcast to share a little of that with you through these conversations. I think those of you who already know me will know that I'm only ever going to talk to people I like and find interesting. Whatever happens, whoever I'm talking to, wherever we go conversationally, it's always going to be real. Here on Huey Off the Record. And we're kicking off the pod with the pod father himself, my man Ricky Gervais. The dude really needs no introduction, but in case you've lived under a rock for the last 15, 20, dude is a writer, director, comedian, actor, producer, director, I said that twice, author, and one of the most successful podcasters ever with the Ricky Gervais Show before this shit was cool, man. Among many other things, he's the creator of hit shows The Office and Extras, the movie Life on the Road. He got 7 BAFTAs, 5 British Comedy Awards, 3 Golden Globes, 2 Emmys, and a little something you might not know about him. It's something we talk about in this episode. When he was a little young guy about town in the 80s, he was a wannabe pop star and the manager of that band Suede. Yeah, you should totally Google that shit. When we spoke, he was right about to start, well, actually had started a couple shows of his last stand-up tour, Humanity, the first one in 7 years, which I went to see with my wife a few days before we recorded the first part of the pod. It was awesome. He's an amazing, funny guy, like we all know. Great insights, you know, pragmatism at its best. Someone you can tell really honed his craft over the years, and I respect that. So, yeah, we get into it on the episode talking about fame, show business, social media, of course, religion, and weird science. The time Ricky thought he was having a heart attack on stage because he took too many cold meds, like flu stuff, you know, kinds of vibes you out. And how I know mob dudes, but Ricky doesn't know mob dudes, so we don't talk too much about that. And I should also mention that this wasn't the first time we recorded this conversation. I'm new to this podcasting stuff, and the first time I met with Ricky, I had like an iPod and a phone, and I just tried to record everything, didn't record nothing. Ricky's cool, generous guy, he was happy to meet me and shoot the shit with me again, and honestly, the second time was better, so you can thank my inspired podcasting skills for that one. And before we begin, my producer told me this is important, so I'm going to say this up front. If you like this podcast and want to hear more from me and the people I speak with that I know, don't forget to leave a rating and review and click the subscribe on your favorite podcast joint and get the brand new Huey Off the Record episodes direct to your device every week, baby. And yep, I'm going to remind you that again before we finish up here today. So turn on, well, I guess you already did that, tune down and drop in. I hope you enjoy my first podcast with my man, Ricky Gervais. But yeah, I mean, I got to a point where I just wanted to do what I do well. So when they were talking about, oh, you should do this guy and this guy, I go, I don't know that person. I wouldn't know what to talk to them about. You know what I mean?
Like, yeah, I try and do things that I don't want to be, I don't want to ever feel like an imposter. I get offered things that, you know, they say things, oh, this would be good for your profile, or oh, you'd be great at it. And I think, but what if people think, well, why is he doing that? Why is he going on Newsnight talking about politics? Mm-hmm. Why is he comparing the wrestling? Why is he? Do you know what I mean? I have no interest in it.
I mean, but if you did really like wrestling,
well, that's fine.
It makes sense, right?
That was fine. Yeah, yeah. But no, I try and do things that I'm passionate about, and two, there is a certain degree of a responsibility to the audience, because they know what I care about and what I do, and I can have new interests and I can change my mind, but I think they know the difference that when I talk about comedy or animal rights than if I was suddenly a pundit for something that I'd never mentioned before. Yeah. Why am I doing that? And because there are professional pundits, yeah, and they're great. Some people can talk about anything. They do a bit of research. I remember those things. Remember those things? I Love 1990 and stuff, right?
Yeah, all those things. Yeah,
it was always the same people, right? And they were remembering adverts from it because they just watched them.
Yeah,
they'd watched them to get the interview to get $500. You know,
I get asked to do all that shit all the time, and they asked me to do that, and like they asked me to do a Bond theme thing, and I was like, yeah, we did a Bond theme. The criminals did. We have all the time in the world. So I went there. And I didn't know I was getting paid. I could have gotten $500 out of them.
I don't know.
In any event, I go there and they're like, what's the worst Bond song? And I slag Adele off, right? And I didn't do it hard. I was just like, I didn't like that song. And they called me back and they said, can you come back in and expound on that? I was like, no, why? They always kind of look for people to do dumb shit. And I think that's what a lot of people end up doing is dumb shit.
Everything's clickbait.
Yeah.
Everyone wants a feud.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I can do an hour interview and someone asks me something about happened the day before and I go, oh, I'm not interested in that, or I shouldn't. But the headline says he's not interested in something. Well, then don't... That's not fair.
Yeah, I know.
Because everyone now, and this is what's, you know, happening, I think, more and more, and particularly the last 12 months, people want, they need drama. They want to be on, there's only two sides now, and it's ridiculous. People are split down the middle, you know.
Well, it's the us and them thing, but do you remember when the reality TV started coming out over here? It was like Big Brother or something like that. It was like 15 years, 16 years
ago. I remember it really well. I loved it.
At first, you're kind of like, wow.
A social experiment.
Yeah, exactly. And now everybody's a social experiment.
Well, you know, that's how it started. That was, you know, and it was what Life on the Road was sort of about. It was about how the world had changed in 15 years behind David Brent's back, because, you know, he was one of those early reality stars, you know, which was, you know, it was a quainter time. It was when people, ordinary people, got their 15 minutes of fame and that was it.
And then they got happy with that.
And then they got on with their lives. Now they've got a DVD to show the kids, right?
Yeah, exactly.
But now it's a job. Now it's an obsession. Now it's it's nearly a mental illness, I think, now. And
that's a good idea because I was thinking, like, Shatori, I was thinking one time about when, you know, like, everybody does the sideways David Brent looks now. That's like kind of like part of our culture, which I think is great. But it's also, you see people doing that to nobody. And that's when it starts becoming a bit of a mental illness.
Oh.
When someone just, like, if I'm talking to you and I go...
Yeah,
you know, that's,
I know.
Like, I mean,
but also, even in reality, so-called reality now, there's actually a category for award shows called constructed reality. And that's those things where, you know, those... I could be wrong on some of these things. I don't want to diss things that don't do it, but... It feels to me like things like The Housewives of Here and There and Made in Chelsea... The producer says, sit down, you're going to have an argument now. Or, you know, and they're not on the... There's impossible coincidence. They sit down and go, where were you so-and-so? Well, the production team has told you that, because you couldn't know that. So they have contrived...
Is it turning into wrestling, man?
Well, like, I think so. I think life has turned into that. Because now, over the last sort of like... As I say, 15, 20 years where people have started living their life like an open wound to stay famous and stay relevant and be popular. And that's all it was. It was people seeing fame as a shortcut to happiness. And they've forgotten that. They've forgotten what the aim was. They've forgotten that, you know, they thought, oh, if I did this, I'd be happy. Now they just think fame for no other reason than being famous, right? And they've sort of... they've just gone for the middleman. They've forgotten what the end, you know,
it was a byproduct fame.
Exactly, that, of course.
I mean, we did touch on it last time. I do remember we were talking about music, right? And you mentioned if you shouldn't have wanted to be a pop star.
That was my mistake. When I was 20, I wanted to be a pop star and I should have wanted to be a musician. And I carried that with me when I did this job and I knew I wanted to be a creative, you know.
See, that stuck with me too, because that's a, you know, that's kind of how I looked at it. When I put my first record out, it's like, oh, shit, I got to be on the cover. Oh, shit, I got to go photo shoot on it. I'd rather have money than fame was one of my lyrics, right? So it was kind of like, I understood that there was part of it, but at first I didn't think it was that immediate with the band. I mean, we put a record out, next thing we know, we were playing these big festivals over here and playing with U2, and it was like...
Do you think... Now, that's funny, isn't it? Because there's a film like Godfather 3... where the bloke wants to be famous,
yeah.
And the guy goes, "You're on the cover of so and so. You're a gangster. Why are you trying?" It's like
Bugsy Siegel, right?
But now, strange. Now everyone wants to be famous, right? It's not enough. Billionaires want to be famous. Donald Trump was a billionaire, right?
Then
he wanted a reality show. And now he wants to be the president. It's like collecting. It's incredible. I think that it's now there's a whole generation who understands fame as a job.
Yeah, it's strange, man. Because I was in a hotel in London recently when my band was playing. My wife was with me, and one of the girls that was with my wife's friends and the other guy in the band's wife said, "Oh, that's that dude from that show." And there was some kid there who looked like a parody of a hip hop guy.
Yeah,
he was like a white guy with a hat on sideways,
sure,
big tongue sticking out of things. And I was like, "Who is this guy?" And he was like, "You know,
looks like a logo on a skateboard."
Yeah, really, I went last minute in Brooklyn on my old neighborhood. And he's like, "Yo," telling people "yo" and all this stuff. And I was like, "Oh my goodness!" And he was on some Essex show. We were talking about the Essex,
right?
And, you know, apparently he's very, very famous. But you can see that he really doesn't know what he's supposed to do with that. You know,
of course. Like, and also, fame is so relative to the circles you move in, your demographic, what you do. Yeah. I mean, I've been told, you know, this guy, he's got a billion YouTube followers. He's the most famous person amongst 13-year-old girls. And of course, do you know what I mean? Fame doesn't mean anything anyway, per se.
Yeah, no, I agree with you on that. Yeah. It's kind of nice if you're at a restaurant and you're waiting with your girl or something, and the guy goes, "Oh, hey, you know, I like what you do. I've got to take it."
I talk about that in my stand-up.
Oh, really?
I became wealthy late in life. I became famous late in life. I've got all the same values, but you do get spoiled. Yeah. And I talk about...
I did like this.
The first time you get walked through customs, you're embarrassed, your head's down, you're looking at your watch pretending you're late. Mm-hmm. The second time you go, "Where's that bloke who walks us through?"
Where's my fucking Jimmy?
But it's funny because with fame, you know, the reason you sort of travel like that is because... I'm trying to get my privacy back.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? If they said, it's not because I think that I should be treated differently, I think I should be treated the same. And sometimes the only way you can be treated the same is to travel more luxuriously so you get your privacy back.
Yeah,
do you know what I'm saying? If they said first class is really busy, but coach is empty, I'd go in coach.
Yeah.
I'd go, "Oh, I'll go and coach." Do you know what I mean? I want the quietest, most private room and table.
Well, just the fact that you're not flying private all the time is a good example of that, you know.
Exactly. I just. I mean, that's the bad thing about fame, that you miss your anonymity.
Yeah.
You want to be able to turn it on and off.
I had a thing going on in America that was great. I put a record out. It did well everywhere else but America. Everywhere else. So I go home, I was anonymous. It was great.
That's great.
Like every time I came home from the passport dude would look at me, he'd be like, and they swipe it. He's like, "You know, what are you doing?" I was like, "I play in a band." He's like, "What band?" I tell him, he's like, "Never heard of you. Welcome home." And it was great because it was like leveling.
But it's funny, when I go to America and I'm going through customs, I want that guy above all else to say, "Hey, I saw you on Jimmy Fallon." Have a nice day.
There were a couple times. And I come in and they're just like, "Oh, I'm gonna have to do that, Huey. Come on through. Or can you sign this?" And stuff like that.
Yeah.
That's kind of cool when you go and someplace. Do you live most of the time in LA or something?
No, I live most of the time in London. But it's funny, isn't it?
Because I was in New York a lot of time, and it would be great because I'd still get the stories. I could still study people. And no one was like, "Who's that weird guy from the band looking at us for?" It's like, you know.
But it's funny, isn't it? Because we want everything. We do want to. We do want the table when we need it, but then we want no one to see us when we're sitting at that table. Yeah. We don't want to be bothered.
Well, in New York, I knew a lot of guys, right? I knew people who killed people and stuff like that, like all the mob dudes. So if I went somewhere, chances are they knew.
I'd just like to say for this podcast, I don't know anyone who's killed. I don't really know this guy. I don't know anything. I've never seen anything. I wasn't there.
But it actually is great because that was the best of both worlds. That no one knew who the fuck I was. They used to call us the Sopranos at this one nightclub.
Right.
This is so, like, whatever.
Well, this is so funny, right? Now, this is why I brought up The Godfather, but I didn't want to insult you. Because when you said, you know, I wanted money, not fame, I wanted to say that's like gangster talk.
It really is.
And I thought, I can't say that to him, so I told a story about a film.
Thank you for trying to spare my feelings. I appreciate that, man. But I knew that this was a hustle. The music thing was a hustle when I got into it. I knew that, but I knew that I was actually good at that. So it was kind of like, I knew it was a game and I had to play and things, but
yeah.
I knew that I could play music and it was a passion of mine. So I didn't feel like too much of an imposter throughout the whole thing. But yeah, I a lot of times I was like, you know...
Do you see, so we've got different feelings because I feared fame for a very different reason. And that was, you know, I was never one for gossip. I don't read those tabloid stories. You know, I watch TV and I go, who's that? I don't know anyone who's had an affair with someone else's husband or, you know what I mean, the footballer who took coke. I don't care.
You have other shit to do, man.
Yeah.
Like, I have other shit to do as well. So.
And I don't know that it's true. So I don't want to be part of that gossip, mm-hmm. right? Mm-hmm. And so I feared that. I never signed that deal with the devil, make me famous and you can go through my bins.
Yeah.
And I feared, I also didn't want to be lumped in with those people that do anything to be famous. Mm-hmm. So I was probably overcautious. I was very combative. I was very sort of private and I was militant about, you know, I'm not that guy. You know, I do my own thing. You're never going to see me falling out a nightclub on coke. You know what I mean? You're never.
Yeah, because you do it in your own. Well, I'm going to sing a few. You fall out of that shit in your own driveway in your walled off compound somewhere. That's what I always said. If I was going to do something, I'm a private guy.
Yeah.
And I got lucky too when I was later in life. When the band got signed, we were 27. I was 27. So I was a grown up. I'd been a Marine and all that kind of stuff. So
yeah.
I knew what was up. But I also wasn't subjected to all this crazy internet shit that's going on now.
Well, I think so. I don't even do that. I know I don't. I haven't got any of those habits. I don't do drugs. I don't gamble. You know, I'm not one of those guys. My idea of a night out is a night in on the couch drinking a bottle of wine. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, I do. So, I know exactly what you mean.
And so, I didn't have anything to hide, but that doesn't matter because it doesn't have to be true. They can just make shit up. Well, so I feared that as well. And I think I was overcautious and I was slightly phobic and now I'm over it. I feared the first bit of criticism. I feared the first bad review. And when it happened, I thought, hey, I'm not dead.
Yeah.
Who gives a fuck? So now I don't care. Now I even wind people up. Now I say stupid things. Now I say things like, I'm going to start crack when I'm 60 because I don't care what they print.
What was that movie Alan Arkin was in where he was like an 80-year-old dude who had just started doing heroin and cocaine and stuff. He's like, I mean, it's 80. Drugs are for old people.
Well, exactly.
Was it Little Miss Sunshine? Was that?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, it's
a movie, man.
Yeah. Oh my god. Oh, listen. I'm trying to get the best out of my body, but my body is something that just takes my mind round.
Yep.
You know, that's why I want my body to be healthy, so my mind stays healthy. Yeah. When it goes, you know. I'll have a few good years and then I want to go into a chemist and go, give me the pill.
Well, dude, you won't have to get to that. You ever read this book called The Singularity is Near?
No.
You know the guy Ray Kurzweil who made the synthesizers back in the day?
Yeah.
Now, he's a mad scientist. He made his first synth when he was like 12 or some shit. He's like one of those crazy guys, but in a good way. And he wrote this book called The Singularity is Near, and it has to do with biology and technology merging. This is really strange. You know, you probably heard a little bit about
it. So we're going to be a mind in a box soon, are we?
Essentially, you know, you could be a mind that will travel around in a robot. Or say your lung's not doing good. You smoked a lot, right? They can grow you a new lung out of your own stem cells pretty much now.
If you have stem cells are amazing.
I mean, a lot of times I think...
It's only being blocked because the religious right.
Yeah,
of course. Yeah, I mean, stem cells can cure stuff now.
Yeah, absolutely. And they're making it to the point where I knew a guy, I did a gig in Oxford back in, you know, the 90s, and some kid was like the head of the student union. He's like a geneticist, right? So he knows all this shit. And it's pretty much, this book is worth reading because it does give us guys hope that are a little bit later in life that want to stick around because we got shit to do.
Yeah.
I think that's important. You know, the biology is going to help.
Yeah, well, you know, the mind is everything, yeah, and the physical carries it around and all that stuff. But
And that's the thing is, especially when we start getting, we were talking about last time, I was feeling sick and, you know, hypochondriatic and stuff.
Oh, was that the day after I thought I was having a heart attack on stage?
No, I saw you the first time.
The next night, I was on stage, right?
Because you weren't that well, you were drinking a lot of Lemsip.
I felt really ill, right? And I said, oh my God, I've got to stop, I feel ill, because I felt I was going to faint, right? And the room went quiet, and I went, no, don't go home. I said, is there a doctor in? Silence. I went, just my fucking luck.
Yeah,
they all laughed. I said, listen, I'm having a heart attack or a stroke, right? I looked at my Fitbit and it said 107, and someone shouted, sit down. I went, yeah, good idea. The road manager came running on with a fucking stool. I said, a fucking stool? I don't want a stool. I want a slump.
I'm gonna die on stage.
I'm gonna fall off a fucking stool like Humpty Dumpty, right? Fucking out. And then I was fine.
Have it on the phone too, that'll be forever.
Of course. So that made the paper. Ricky has heart attack in inverted commas. But I had to call on my family and go, no, I had a bug. So that's the shit that gets you into it. You joke about having a heart attack,
and then the
it
next
makes
year,
it in the paper. Well, you can't do jokes anymore.
I think you can't joke with yourself. That's no. I think we might have jinxed ourselves.
Hmm. So I was on a chat show recently, I think Jimmy Fallon, and I was talking about me getting fat, and I was going, it's my own fault, I eat too much, I drink too much, I don't burn it off the next day. Someone tweeted me, tweeted a thing saying, why did you do so much fat shaming? I went, I was fat shaming me. I'm allowed to fat shame myself.
All right, this
what sort of fucking world is
because
this?
Because you
yeah,
are
exactly,
being
yeah, yeah, right. Exactly, yeah. Jesus
see,
Christ.
See, the one thing I think is good for having kids is you get perspective. I talked to my five-year-old, I'll try to tell him that. So he'll say these exact same. So you have someone sticking up for you because you were making fun of you.
Yeah.
It just doesn't make any sense.
No, I know.
The social justice shit is getting a little bit out of hand, though, too.
Well, I think there's been... everyone's culpable for what's happened, you know, because I do think the Trump effect is a natural reaction to a certain extent of people feeling they've been disenfranchised. They feel that they've had an ordeal, which often they haven't. I mean, this is the problem with when you've had privilege for so long, equality suddenly seems like oppression, right? But the other end of it, people who won't let anyone get away with anything, people being mobbed on Twitter for using the wrong word.
Yeah.
And, you know, there is such a thing. I'm a fan of political correctness, you know, in a way, but that's all it is. It's only political correctness. When it comes to it, actual correctness trumps political correctness. So you can't go around worrying. You can worry about people's feelings, but not the fact that it infringes on freedom of speech. And I think I really think offence is the collateral damage of freedom of speech. Freedom of speech is more important than offence. Okay. And I think both sides went a bit crazy. Only some aspects of both sides. And there's a middle ground.
There's the people the way outside that are just always on the left and the right.
Of course.
And the top and the bottom just crazy.
Of course, you know, exactly. But most people are moderate. Most people understand that sometimes there are bad words, and then there are words that some people find bad and some people don't. You know, I think that's the thing. You know, just because you're offended, it doesn't mean you're right. Some people are offended by equality. Some people are offended by mixed marriage. So fucking what?
Yeah.
Fuck them.
Yeah.
Whereas,
well, see, that's it. I think when you say fuck them,
yeah.
I think that's how my generation was. If you said something that offended somebody, they'd have a word with you. You would settle your interpersonal dispute with that person then and there, right? And if you chose to do it again, you knew that maybe you would get in the same kind of situation, be it a slap or a yelling at or whatever it was. That's how you gauged how you would act.
But
now, with the internet, instead of it being like maybe 10 people you interact with on a daily basis, it could be millions.
Well, of course, and I do blame social media to a certain extent because it perpetrated this myth that my opinion is worth as much as your fact, because popular became right, and popular isn't right.
No, it isn't.
I don't. When people say, I say I don't believe in God, people say, well, 4 billion people do. I go, I don't give a fuck what 4 billion. I don't. It doesn't
a lot
make
people
me wrong.
The world was fat.
Of course, who cares? You know, it's crazy. But now people are saying, you know, well, no, it's just, you know, I believe the Earth is 6,000 years old. Well, then you're a fucking idiot. You know, I'm not trying to change your mind.
Did we say something about? I knew a fact that those people who think the world is only 6,000 years old think that the carbon-dated dinosaur bones that people find were planted by the devil.
Of course. Well, you can always... Exactly.
Planted by the... That's you have to construct a lot of shit if to you, think that that works for you.
But if you believe a guy with a beard made the universe in 6 days, then all bets are off anyway. You can't... You know, you can't argue rationally with irrational people.
I was raised Roman Catholic, right?
I was raised Church of England.
So it was like, you know, I was an altar boy, all that stuff. Me too. But I knew early on while I was doing that shit... that it was okay to respect the people that got down with it, right? Because, like, you know, a lot of people got to do a lot of shit to get them through the night. But it wasn't for me.
No, exactly.
You know? And it's like, that was okay with them, and it's okay with me. And I
agree.
Wasn't offended by them or
no.
Either way.
And I've never had a problem with spirituality. Yeah. I've learned that people I know believe in God. Different gods. Doesn't bother me. But religion's different. Religion is a power structure. Religion is I know what God wants, and what he wants is exactly what I want, coincidentally.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah. You know,
he wants me to have a jet.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Yeah.
You see, that's a really obvious version of it, right?
Yeah.
But you also see stuff. I mean, you know, you mentioned Scientology in your bit, man, and that is, it's one of those things that if anybody kind of is, you know, predisposed to have something else, you know, like the spirituality thing.
Yeah,
you can be spiritual and you can do whatever, but when they start putting names to things, and I think that's
it's also you know how good it is for the people involved, and you know it's Scientology as a belief, again, is no crazier than any other belief.
Oh yeah, that's you know everybody thinks it is.
Of course. Well, you know, it doesn't matter whether it's aliens or zombies. You know, it's all equally crazy, and it's what you do with that. But if you believe in a God and he makes you, and that belief makes you kinder and a good person, bring it on.
Yeah.
You know, I don't need God to be a good person because
do you think that a lot of people think that? That they have to have somebody else to actually make them innately good.
Well, I got a tweet once on Twitter. Someone said, how can you be good if you don't believe in God? I said, well, I'm good because I treat people like I want to be treated, and I did that, right? And he said, but if you don't.
But God said that.
Well, yeah, of course, yeah. All religions claim all virtues. Yeah, like they did exist before there.
I like that.
And this guy sent me a tweet. He said, well, if you don't believe God is watching you, why don't you just go out raping and murdering as much as you want? And I send back, I do. Which is not at all.
That's a great one. I always found, like, especially with Twitter, I started getting into it, right? And I used to get heated with people, and I just didn't think it was good for my blood pressure, frankly, right? But
no.
If I want to laugh, if I'm having a bum day, I will go on Twitter and look for you. And it's because you see the millions of people, and you selectively pick out,
of course,
the one that really needs,
of course,
the good one. And
yeah,
I mean, you can get them good. I mean, but
oh, sometimes I have to search for them because I think my Twitter feed looks like there's more crazies in the world than there actually are. Well, but actually, you know, I've got like 12 million followers, and I get one idiot a day or a week, you know. But sometimes I have to go looking for them.
That's specific. That's actually good. That's actually making the world look like not such a bad place.
It's not such a bad place, you know. It's like they've got a smartphone or a computer, and they're, you know, and they're
first world problems, right? You know, I was thinking about talking about people being entitled, right? And everybody's getting offended because life isn't that bad as it used to be. With that said, if you look about now in different parts of the world, you go to Africa or something like that, they were talking about the things the UN put out, the best places to live, right? And the worst places, what was it, the Central African Republic, where they don't run water, everybody's dying, it's really terrible,
yeah.
Right? It's Africa, right?
Yeah.
Now, if you took those people and put them in the worst situation in the United States, right, which would be, you know, someone probably living in abject poverty in a trailer house somewhere, they would consider that like the Taj Mahal.
Of course,
you know, like,
of course.
Can I get my friends to come by and
Yeah, I know. Yeah,
so it's
no.
relative to, I guess, your experience.
Well, of course.
But on Twitter, it always seems like the people are dumber than anybody else you've ever run into.
Well, I think, again, it's not everyone, but some people, we have lived through the best 50 years of civilization, with no doubt about it, for everything,
yeah.
For tolerance, for freedom, for, you know, potential, for medicine. Again, you know, there's parts of the world that don't have
screwed, yeah.
Yeah, of course, yeah. But, yeah, you get people, you get people shouting at their microwave because it's not as fast as they'd hoped. You know what I mean? It's like,
I don't get any fucking internet here. I don't get any cheese.
Of course.
I got no
course.
Cheese on my phone.
I know. Unbelievable.
You got no water for my family.
I know.
To die? Oh, that might be something, you know?
Exactly. You could be in some sort of tower block that was a huge...
How did you live here?
Someone built a house the size of a mountain, but your Wi-Fi is a little bit... Oh, I do it. I go, oh, it's so weak in the bedroom.
I live out in the country here in England, and I was really happy that I took my phone one day in the John and it had 4G. I was like, yes,
I know,
it's the southwest of England,
I know,
out of the Stone Age, you know.
But think of that, think of the developments, you know. I mean, since computers, it's been exponential, you know.
That's what this book talks about, where you see things. He says it's like 2018, 2019, 2020 is when, if you have the means, you could buy yourself a loan.
Yeah, well, I mean, everything's got faster now. If you think of the gap between the Industrial Revolution and, you know, and the first computer, and now how fast everything's gone. But we haven't changed, you see.
Yeah.
We're still the same person.
We can't change as quick as technology.
Oh, of course we can't. You know, you get what they call a caveman, a hunter-gatherer or something, like, you know, 9,000 years ago. You shave him and teach him English and he can go to work. Yeah. He's us.
Well, do you think with all the technology happening, because the exponential growth leaving pretty much like coal miners and shit like that out of work, like generations of people aren't going to know what to do. Is it? What was that book?
I don't think the threat to humanity is computerization and artificial intelligence. Until we leave them to their own devices, like, you know, sci-fi, and they start learning themselves and they can uproot. And, you know, I don't think that's the real threat. I think we're the real threat to us still.
I mean, we're the one that's fucking up everything around us.
Global warming's going to kill us before a robot gone mad. You know,
I can see that happening.
But I think that the problem with global warming is it's been mismanaged, okay? So, one, you shouldn't have called it global warming, right? Because that sounds good to people.
Yeah.
People who live in shitty areas.
In North America. Yeah. Everybody's like, yeah.
Oh, it should be called global raining, storming, you know.
Global fuck up,
movie. Right? Yeah, exactly, yeah. But, you know, they think that they've got, like, hundreds and hundreds of years, right? Selfishly, they've got hundreds and hundreds of years. But actually, it only takes about a half a degree, average,
for
microbes to wipe us out. Mm-hmm. We're already running out of what antibiotics can do, but we don't know what 1 degree will do to it'd be like germ warfare on us. We won't be able to cope, and I just don't think people, because that sounds such like conspiracy theory and crazy.
No, it doesn't. I mean, Elon Musk was talking about something where he said, you know, he was talking about the sea levels rising an inch around the world, just an inch.
Yeah.
Kill most people.
Well, of course, because it's so flat.
I mean, we are balancing on this perfect area here on Earth for the last couple thousand years, right? It's just fucking great, right?
Yeah.
It was an ice age, and then we got in there, we're fucking great, and we're going to fuck it up to the point where it's going to twist off its axis, fall into the sun, we'll all go blow up, and it's everybody's fault, but, you know, it's everybody's fault for not paying attention.
Yeah, I think that it's those tiny little things, those tiny changes globally are massive. I mean, just think what the volume of water is in an inch of wherever. It's just, yeah. But then, you know, what I'll do is I'll probably build an ark.
You'd be that guy?
Because there's 8 million species of animal, right? I need two of each.
Yeah.
Some you don't even two of. I'll leave the fish to their own devices.
I remember being an altar boy. I remember in the book they left a couple of the bird species out because they could lay on the water and just sit there. You know?
Of course, yeah. The fact that there would be no food because all the plants would have killed.
They can rationalize anything in that Bible.
Yeah. Well, we do it, don't we? We do it. We cherry pick. That's
so do you think? The climate change was sold wrong to everybody? Because
well,
America,
I think
people just keep buying the bigger cars. It's like they don't get it.
They. I think they do get it. They don't care.
I think it's just...
I think that this is such a nebulous, far off concept. Well, some of it is selfish, you know. You know, it's not our fault that the generation before us ruined the earth. So we're thinking, well, why? You know, it's a good point, because now this third world development, and we're going, oh, they're ruining it. I go, well, hold on, you're after 100 years of you raping the earth, you're telling an Indian woman she can't have a fridge. What are you doing? No, this is...
there's a concept of what's civic responsibility, right?
I know.
It was kind of... when I was young, there was that, you know. People thought, you know, if you saw a piece of garbage on the ground, like, and if you're in your block, your neighborhood, you just pick it up, throw it in the garbage can. It's not a big deal.
No, I know. I do all that. I mean, I do all that. I do the recycling. I don't run the tap when I clean my teeth, you know. But then I jump on a jumbo jet to America. What can I do?
That's the thing. I mean, we all have to have some kind of carbon footprint, right? I mean, that's the idea. I mean, I don't really know if mine's good or bad, but you could also say, like, you know, will it make a difference in like the next 50 years? Yeah, it could actually kill the species, right? I mean, we could be gone.
Yeah,
50 years of everybody just goes. Mm. I mean, you could see people doing stuff with solar energy, and what was that? Elon Musk has the solar panels that look like roof tiles now, and they're cheaper than roof tiles.
I do all that. You know, I do all that. I live like a hippie, but then I do jump on a jet. You know, and so I don't know. That probably wipes out everything I've done for a year, and it's the same with everyone else. When you know, you want these people to wash out a jam jar and use it again, and then they look up and they see they look at Hong Kong like that could be seen. You could get warm in space, you know, and they go, really? I'm gonna sort out my cardboard, but I can see a chimney over there that's destroying, you know. It's a tough one. Really is a tough one.
Stay tuned, there's more when we come back.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Do you think the stuff that's going on in arts, like movies and music and stuff like that, reflects any of how people really feel? Because, I mean, if you look at the music nowadays, it is really disposable. Like, we were talking about people we don't even know. And when I go through some of the music that I get sent, I'm just like, what the fuck is this?
I think when people are left to their own devices, it's about the individual.
Yeah.
People get it, they're either selfish or they're not. They either care or they don't. And I think outside the law, you know, listen, I think, you know, to a certain extent, and I'm all for freedom, I think nicotine should be banned in a way. Mm-hmm. If you think about what that does to people,
yeah,
and other drugs are banned, you should go, why are you selling cigarettes? Well, you're selling cigarettes because it makes so much money, and then that tax goes to saving people who have got lung cancer, but they wouldn't have had lung cancer if you hadn't, you know. And it's crazy. It's great, but it comes down to the individual, and the same with caring and changing the world. You know, I don't know if a Bob Dylan song ever changed anyone's mind, right? It probably didn't globally or change government, but what it did do is get the odd individual suddenly thinking, you know what, war is probably wrong, you know. But
with that theory, right, because you also, like, stuff that you make and stuff that I make, you have to almost work for it, but in a good way. Like, you work for your art, you're rewarded by it if you put some time in and think about some of the things that you have in your films and your stand-up and in music that has different layers to it. When you work for them, you're rewarded. Now it seems like everything's just immediate, like McDonald's, right? You want that, here you go, take it. It's cheap, but yeah, you know you can come back and get the same thing.
Yeah, I think we all, in a way, it's funny, the carbon footprint is a lovely metaphor for everything, really, because I think the point of life is probably to enjoy yourself without hurting others, and make the world slightly better than it would have been without you. You only have to be
savage.
But you know, but yeah, exactly. Yeah. Exactly. But you only have to. You only have to get it. You only have to be. I don't know.
Is it slightly? Intent, think?
I don't know.
You intend to do good things. I think you kind of do. You know, I'm going to try to be a good guy today.
It just
and
comes down
to be a better guy than if you're like, you'll fuck everything.
I think it comes down to conscience. Mm. I want to be able to sleep at night. I don't want to feel that anything I've done has caused someone harm, or it's simple that paying tax. I
like the way you moved that one.
Well, I do. Yeah. I
pay tax. Yeah.
I think it's a privilege for me to pay tax. I came from nothing, and I would be dead without the health service and free education and free hospitals. And so I think I don't consider whatever money I earn, I think that's half mine. Mm-hmm. I think that's half mine. The other half is my rent on earth. Do you know what I mean?
No, I do. I hear you. I think it's important with, like, the civil responsibility thing, but it always seems to be, it always seems to be argued in our case in that respect. I didn't come from money at all. I was a poor kid, right?
Yeah.
From New York. And I worked for stuff, but I did get assistance along the way, be it someone at the boys club who taught me how to swim when I was 8.
Of course.
You know, somebody who did this for me, said that for me, you know, teachers and things like that at a public school. So you always figure that that's your rent, right?
I think,
yeah. Paid forward, what was that thing?
Yeah, exactly. No, I totally agree. And that's a system that's put in place to make sure we do. But even without that, you know, I think we're basically good people. We are a bit selfish, and we do think of ourselves, and we are narcissistic, and we live in our own brains, right? And we need all these things to survive. But when you are in a safer, you know, a world that we live in an affluent world where our firstborn isn't dying of dysentery. We're not being shot at. Well, maybe you are. I don't know what you've done in your past, but I don't want to know. But you know, we can start to introspect and worry about the future and what if we're a good person or not. And I think you should now and again. But basically, you know, I think you know if you're a good person or not. You know,
I think you're right. People are generally cool, right? I mean, yeah. It's like those disaster films when the world's at stake, and it shows like the clips from all over the world, like in Japan and Africa and America and England, are all rallied around Trafalgar Square, like looking all concerned. We're like, that's us good humans, right? That's
I think
us
so.
Good humans.
And I think when it comes to it, when it's black and white and you're confronted with it, if a young African kid came to your door and said, 20p will stop me going blind, you give him 20p.
Yeah.
But we know 20p will stop an African girl, but we're not sending 20p because it's deferred responsibility.
Yeah.
They did an experiment, right, at a train station where they had one person, they waited to one person by himself, right, and this guy was just, he wasn't part of the experiment, he didn't know about it, and they staged a woman being sort of attacked. And he looked around and he got up and said, "Oi, you, stop it." Mm. He was by himself, right? Then they waited for loads of people there and they showed a woman being attacked and they all ignored it because they all thought, I'll let someone else do it.
Oh, wow.
Isn't that interesting?
That's crazy.
And they
so even, you left to your own devices?
It even made a difference, right, what way the person was facing. Like, if you were facing away from the mugging, you could pretend you couldn't see it. Whereas you were facing for it, sure, more people...
Facebook, man, I can't hear that.
More people said, hey, what are you doing? If they were facing...
Wow.
The mugging. And that's what we do every day. We know that there's abject poverty and people dying, but we're not seeing it. But if we walk past a guy with a dog on a string,
yeah,
and we look around, we think, well, fuck, Jesus, yeah, a pound, yeah, of course, you know. And it's not as black and white as in the films where you've got a twirly moustache.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I think we all do the right thing when it comes to it. Most of us.
Yeah, I mean, there are a few psychopaths out there, obviously.
Oh, of course. And there's people that cause it. Yeah. Of course, yeah.
Speaking of psychopaths, I don't want to switch it up too much, but when it comes to music, do you think people who are crazy make the best music? If you look at it, like, we talked a little bit about David Bowie last time, right? Not to say he was crazy at all, but he was a unique dude. He saw things through his own kind of...
Yeah.
Unique...
Exactly. I mean, crazy is a strong term, isn't it? Yeah. But you mean slightly
mean
different.
In a bad way. Yeah. Yeah, I mean,
no, exactly. Yeah. No, I know what you mean. No, I do. I do think you have to be. This is sound very pretentious, and I don't think this is true of all art. Or, but I think to a certain extent you have to remain a bit of an outsider. Because
mm-hmm.
I mean, even if you're a really good observer of people, it's still like a found object. You know, when I write, I'm inventing that. But it's always based on someone I know or based on a real thing. And if it could happen, it might happen. It probably has happened.
Mm-hmm.
But it's still, I still think that I've created that. So I still think you have to remain an outsider. And what happens in art is when you start worrying about what's popular or second guessing people, and then you end up it being homogenized and anodyne, because you're going for the lowest common denominator and you're trying to please everyone. And that's why soap operas are all the same every week. They just change the words, you know, because they know what people want. And it, you know, I think the odd one out is stand-up, really.
Yeah, I always thought that was like, because when I do my gigs, it's nothing like stand-up, but I always talk to the people in between the songs and things. And I have a couple friends who do stand-up, and they're like, you know, that... Going out there, we've talked a little bit about when you're famous going out there, but just going out there and doing your 10 minutes, whatever, like that, that must be so rewarding if you kill a room.
Well, it's funny because that's where there is something. There's a couple of things in common with rock stars and comedians.
But is it, you have to read the room almost immediately, because I do a festival, I got to look at 50,000 people and go, what is the thing I can say that
but that's what you do.
Happier than sad. You know?
Yeah, it's different because you've got these perfectly pre-created memes.
Yeah,
these songs that have lasted. Mm-hmm. And so it's only between the songs that you have to worry.
Yeah, you guys. Yeah. You know, it's like boom.
Exactly.
You walked on stage when I saw you, and that was a big joint in Bristol, and that was the first one you did in seven years, right?
But I'd done 20 warm-ups, and this is what's different about stand-up to say another sort of comedic art form, right? When you write a sitcom or a movie, you do your best bet with all your things, all your inputs, all your hard work, and you create this thing. And you put it out there, and that's done now. There's nothing you can do about it. Mm-hmm. Someone comes up to you and says, I didn't like that. Yeah, I go, there's nothing I can do about it.
Yeah,
it's done.
Yeah,
it's
done. Yeah.
Whereas it's a movable feast with stand-up. You go out there and you talk, right? And where there's a laugh, you keep that bit.
Yeah.
It's like selective evolution, where you can create it very quickly because you get audio feedback.
Yeah.
So keep the bits they laugh at, change the bits they don't. Soon they're laughing at everything, or they're gasping in the right, they're doing what you wanted them to do, right? After like 20, 30 gigs. And people are the same. Outside language barrier and you know, the odd sort of pop reference, people are the same. So that works now like a song. My hour works like your set. If it works once, it works twice. The things that change, the things that make things go different in stand-up, right, is the day of the week.
Really?
Yeah.
No shit. I noticed that too. If it's a Saturday, it's better than a Friday.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Opposite for me.
Really?
I don't do Fridays and Saturdays. I don't want people joining in being rowdy.
Well,
I want them to listen.
Yeah, okay.
You want them up on their feet having a good time.
Wow. That's a little nuance of it.
I want them sitting down listening, because I know my shit works if they're listening. Because there's
yeah, and I know my shit works if they're not.
Well, you know, but you know what I mean?
Yeah,
you've got 50K.
Yeah.
I've got nuance.
Yeah.
That's all I've got. I've only got nuance and surprise.
Wow.
So if they're not listening, they, you know, if they fuck a punchline.
Yeah.
They don't fuck a power chord.
Yeah, that's
they add to it.
Than they are, yeah.
Yeah, exactly. And the other thing is the room. I want a warm, smoky Victorian theatre. If I aircraft hangers, that fucking echo going round, and then laughing at slightly different. It's cold. Yeah. It's cold.
Does alcohol play a part? Do you want people drinking before the game?
I want them loose.
Yeah.
I don't want them drunk.
Yeah.
Because
it's like that's how. I know that when comedians they do like say you go to Caroline's or something in New
exactly.
York, right? The guys who are the earlier on probably do better than the guys who are doing like 11:30 because
and that's the difference. If you play a club thing like Caroline's or Jongleurs or those right, those people that work they do comedy that cuts through alcohol.
Really,
they do. Hey, what's this with that? Hey, so I was fucking the Pope. Hey, so they do things that cut through alcohol. I can't have silences. I can't do nuance about cot death with people who are drunk. Because do you know what I mean? Because they won't listen. Yeah. They won't get it.
Yeah.
You know, you need to be people to get. You know, so you can't do anything. You can't do anything subtle or nuanced or innovative if it's a room full of people who have gone out for beer. And there's a comedian on.
Yeah, I hear you.
I want people who've come to hear what I've got to say, and they sit down. They paid $30, and you know. Yeah.
I guess I come from an old school too, because in New York there was like those places on Bleecker Street, you know, with the Comedy Cellar joints. And all
oh
stuff.
Yeah.
And I knew guys who do that stuff, so I'd go to see my friends. So I knew you shut up and you listen, right? But of course, everybody from Jersey doesn't know that, so they come into these clubs, and that's what they do. They go and get the cheap beer.
Yeah.
And you know, it seems almost like.
I've never wanted to play that. I've never wanted to. You know those guys that do that. That they do their. They
it's
do their two
like
sets.
And they know they're going out and they're. It's like
well, they do. Yeah, no, like, they do. And that and you know it can get you keen to you know and there, that there is a skill in that.
One of the two.
Yeah,
right?
I mean, but the thing is, I know people that you know still do those things and they go, oh, there was a hen party in or there was eight guys with fucking hats shaped like cocks, right? And I won them over. I won them over in the end. And I go, I don't
want
to win them over.
People,
fuck
them. Like yeah.
No, I don't want to give them any joy.
But there's certain comedians that like Jeff Foxworthy and stuff like that, like who's like a huge comedian.
I've never heard of him. He's worth $400 million.
Yeah. Now this dude, I've heard of this guy when I was in the Marines. I was stationed in North Carolina, right? And I was hanging out with a bunch of guys that were talking in this character, right? They're blah, 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 blah. And I was like, what, this is not even funny. It was this guy, Jeff Foxworthy. He's like south of the Mason-Dixon line, he is like the biggest comedian in America or something.
Oh, is he a southern comedian? Is
yeah,
it,
he's
is
like
it,
a
yeah.
redneck kind of comedian.
Yeah, I think he started it, didn't he? He started doing stuff about...
You know where you're a redneck when...
Yeah,
and,
that's it, yeah.
Like,
no, I saw him on... I saw him on the sort of... it was a history of comedy, and they featured all of it, and that's where I heard about him. And he's made millions, yeah.
Yeah, but that's the thing. I think, what is it, Noel Gallagher said it doesn't... about record sales, it doesn't mean you're good.
No, of course not.
Yeah, I mean...
No.
But guys like that seem... to kind of, like you're talking about the lowest common denominator comedy. Now, when I saw your new one, right, with Humanity, right, I think I saw that was the first night you did in a big theater. That was great because it was people listening and kind of, like, almost expecting you to tell them a really good yarn. You know, like, you're into the joke more than you're into going, it's fucking Ricky. But you're like, whoa, what's he talking about?
Well, that's funny. I've
you do get away with crib death and shit like that.
Yeah, well, I think that...
so I'm not going to ask you to babysit, by
No. Someone said to me the other day, so I won't show you pictures of my kid. And I go, no, it's only joking. I do a thing about, you know, I don't want to see pictures of people with kids, right? But I mean, you know, that's not true.
Yeah,
that's not true. You sort of play a character, you know. I've always played the sort of person who said the wrong thing, that came down the wrong side. I get things wrong. I'm the idiot bore.
But at the same time, they know they. I guess they identify with the good in you.
Well, of course,
not doing it maliciously.
But
right?
Now, after 15 years of knowing me, I don't have to play around. Now I can just say it like you do amongst friends, and they know I'm kidding. They know the irony. Yeah. So this is my favorite tour I've ever done. Good things, I've had 7 years off, which is, you know, the longest gap apart from my first one where I had 40 years to think about it.
But is that kind of good having that much
it's
time
great
off?
It's great
because you know the material, right?
Well, one, the you know, just commercially they were gagging for it, you know, they And I also said this could be my last, the way I feel. And so they bought tickets quick. They, you know, I don't do a lot. I don't tour, you know, all year. I don't do the circuit. So, it felt like it was a special occasion for me and them, which was nice. But It's my favourite. I also sort of, I realised the privilege, you know, because I went through the big comedian off TV and film, you know, playing that game and doing the stadiums and whatever.
Did you do stadiums?
Big arenas, yeah.
Was that crazy with you and a mic? It must be like
it's not good for anyone. I mean, it's good for me because it's a big injection of cash in one night, you know. I am doing this time around.
Things a little bit similar. Where if you're going to do what you do, make it worthwhile.
But it's better for me and the audience if it's in a 400 seater, no doubt about it. Yeah. Now, like London, because I live here. I'm doing like 3 weeks at Hammersmith Apollo, which is 3,500, right? Instead of doing Wembley in the O2.
Wembley's right around the corner, because you can go there and just be home by 10:30.
Exactly. Right? I'd rather do three Hammersmiths than a Wembley, because it's better for the audience.
Yeah.
In some countries, you know, like in Scandinavia, in Europe, and even in America and Canada, I have got to do the bigger ones because I don't live there.
Yeah.
So I can't do 3 weeks in Toronto.
You play the Garden though, right?
Yeah.
So you and Led Zeppelin, huh?
Well, again, you know, I think there's some venues, even at a big size, are better than other venues at a big size.
Well, that one's got, but it's also New York, too, where they actually will shut up and let you say something. Especially if they pay.
And I still feel like an import in New York and Canada, and it feels, you know, it's always felt very, very special for me. Because everything, growing up, you know, I do feel very British, and I think my humour's British, but my comedy's almost more American.
Well, see, New York, I didn't know we had such a unique sense of humour for America. I mean, I was a young kid when I went to the Marines, and I realised, holy shit, this is not working over here, man.
No, New York is different to the rest of America. Same as London's probably different to the rest of, you know,
true in a way, England. But I mean, you know, I found that my sense of humour is more British. Because I grew up watching Monty Python and even, God forbid, Benny Hill and all that kind of shit on public TV. So I kind of gravitated towards that. And I think a lot of my friends did too.
Well, I think you know, I do. I joked on my last stand-up special I did for HBO. I said, welcome to my American tour. And by American tour, I mean New York and LA. I miss out that big bit in the middle. Yeah. Especially when I'm talking about the Bible. And it was it Tom Parker who said to Elvis, you've got to get that big bit in the middle, because that is America.
Yeah.
I mean, that's the thing. And same as England. You know, England is everything but London, really.
Yeah. I mean, just looking, like, we're talking about popularism, right?
Of course.
Everybody who's kind of like running shit now is the non-capital cities and things. It's like everybody else is now thinking they have something to say.
Oh, but when I was growing up, I mean, I knew people that it hadn't left the town, you know. Going to London was a big thing. It's 36 miles away.
Well, the thing is, most people don't get out of the area. They go as far as their local Walmart in America.
Of course. It's the same everywhere. You know, I heard, you know, only 50% of Americans have got passports.
Mm-hmm.
But more than that, most Americans probably don't leave their state. And but that's not just America. That's England as well. You know, it's the same everywhere. You grow up, you get a house near your mum and dad, and you have kids, and you die. And that's been the way of the world. You know, most people aren't, they're not nomadic. They don't travel around the world. Most people want a house, and they want a garden, and they want to sit there and sit on the couch. I know I do now.
I think a lot of people that I meet who do performance stuff for a living, or just for a living, that's what we kind of do it as now.
Yeah.
But to get into it, I think we all were kind of a similar type of kid in school, where, I mean, I can't speak for you, but I'm going to say what I felt. I felt like I knew everything they were trying to teach me, and I was a little bit bored, and I was more interpersonal than the other kids were, and I would kind of almost be like the class clown in a lot of ways.
Yeah.
And you could get out of trouble with the teachers because you were smart enough to work then.
It's exactly the same as me.
Yeah.
It's exactly, I wasn't a bad kid like you.
Yeah. No, I wasn't a bad kid either.
I didn't get that.
Man, I'll show you pictures of me when I was a little boy. You'd be like, oh. It was a pain in the ass, though. But I wasn't
Hitler was
bad.
Cute when he was little. All kids are cute when they're little. Is that?
I think it just with a lot of people that do this kind of thing, we do kind of go, well, you know, we were all, I guess that's why people hang out, like musicians and actors and all those people hang out, because they have a certain thing that they're.
I think we've seen the world from a different angle.
Yeah.
And I think you have to see things from a different angle.
Is that the removed part you were talking about?
Well, I just think that, you know, and I don't just mean, musicians or comedians or any artist or even scientists. I just think, I think some people live in Plato's cave. And I just think they just think this is the way the world is. Mm. They're told what the world is, and they just accept it. And that could be for any reason, you know. Yeah. I mean, this is getting back to it. This is what religion does. Religion says you don't need to question this. Yeah. We've sorted it for you.
Yeah.
Just do this.
You'll be rewarded when you die.
Exactly.
Yeah, yeah. But be good until
not spirituality learn. Again. Yeah. Spirituality is your own journey, and you know, I'm almost. I've got no problem with spirituality, and you know, I feel a different sort of spirituality when I see a mountain or a flower or an animal. I well up at how beautiful it is, but I'm looking at how perfectly beautiful it is that it came by chance, right? Some and other people are looking at how beautiful it is because God made it. They're both cool.
Yeah.
It doesn't make any difference to what the thing is. It's still fucking beautiful, you know. And sometimes I don't like this. I don't like this. Tribalism, you know, because some things are more important. Like if I'm doing like an animal welfare campaign, I say whether you believe God made this animal or it evolved over 3 billion years, you shouldn't fucking torture it.
Yeah.
And I just think, well, who cares?
You're tying everybody in there, which is good.
Yeah, if
you
have, yeah.
I think when you do stuff like that, and I kind of do things like that too, when you make the example of saying like, I don't care why you love it,
yeah,
or why you care, it's just the fact that you care is a good thing.
Yeah.
And I mean, I always looked at what would Marx say, religion is the opiate of the people.
Exactly, yeah.
But if you look at all the kind of really, the rules that are really sticking people right now, it's all stuff that was done thousands of years ago to keep people in line for a little bit
of
time.
That's exactly what religion was.
Mm-hmm.
Exactly what
religion. A lot of religions have the thing in common, which is be good while you're alive, because when you die, we'll hook you up.
Like everything, mm-hmm. people saw a fast buck in spirituality. So we wanted to make sense of the world. We looked at the sun and we looked at this and why am I here? And we said someone must have created it. That's cool. Then we said, oh, maybe someone's looking over us and I hope he is and I pray. I don't want to die. Maybe I live afterlife. That's great. So all those things, someone came along and went, I know God.
Yeah.
And he says,
he just told me what
you've got to do is give me some money and then you will go to heaven. And that's how religion was born.
It's like, well, I mean, what was the thing? The Inca witch doctors used to have that, they had the exclusive channel to whoever the sun god was, right? And down to the, and that was their hustle. You take care of us, you build us pyramids so we're closer to him.
Yeah.
And people would slave and do all that stuff just so he could give them, when you die, because you'll probably die within the next couple of weeks building my thing.
Of course. But it's all these charlatans. Mm. But, you know, it's not just religion. It's people who say they're talking to your dead grandmother.
Yeah, yeah.
It's only cost you 50 quid to talk to your dead grandmother. Yeah. You know what I mean? It's like...
They're all these places. You see them in New York City. You just drive by. In a nice neighborhood, there's that one on like 7th Avenue South, like off of Bleecker Street.
Oh, yeah.
It's been there for as long as I can remember, 50 years almost, right? It's in this perfect neighborhood. It's like they've had the front redone, but it says psychic. I mean, it's like,
of course.
Who the fuck goes in there?
Well,
who goes in there and goes, okay, here's $150, whatever it is. Tell me what I really need to hear right now.
Faith healers. You know, give me your money and, you know, just pray. Don't take the medicine. I did a tweet recently. You don't see faith healers working in hospitals for the same reason you don't see psychics winning the lottery every week. Mm-hmm. Because it doesn't work, right? If you believe it, fine. You know, there's a certain placebo effect to praying. And again, I've got no problem with people praying, right? But let's not pray instead of life-saving medicine.
Yeah.
Why not?
And also, you said something about my opinion's equal to your facts earlier on, right?
Yeah.
Isn't that just how everybody's just looking at shit now?
It is.
I mean,
it is.
It's just anything that, it's almost as people, if you tell someone that this is actually how things, this is a wood desk, they'll be like, well, just to be contrarians, they would go against it. I think people are just trying to, like when you're talking about being marginalized and not having a voice, I think their voice is now
that's exactly right.
Wrong.
People want to be heard. They want to feel that they've got something to say, and that's the way of the world. We all want to be, we want to think they're interesting, and some people don't quite have the tools to do that. That's all, and they get frustrated, and they often lash out. And yeah. You know, and I'd rather people were honest. I'd rather people said, it doesn't bother me when someone says, oh, I'm only interested in money, because I know where I stand. I'd rather, you know, accountants.
A couple of years later, that's what they're interested in.
Yeah.
Whereas we could have actually had. You know.
It's the people that say things like, "I'm only interested in you finding Jesus, and I know him. So if you give me $1,000, I can introduce you." They're the ones, you know. They're the ones you got to be careful of.
When I was a kid, I'm just talking about I was an altar boy and all that kind of stuff. I remember when I was probably around 10, I started listening to music. And that became my church in a way.
Yeah.
That became something that I could find my uniqueness in.
That's great. Yeah, that was the first art form that I found that there's no greater art form than music. It's as magical as it needs to be. There is something spiritual about it. There is something amazing. There's something. It's clinical what a chord can do. It makes me feel sick. There's nothing as evocative, and I love all art. I love film, I love paintings, I love poetry, all that. But music, there is something just otherworldly of it. It's incredible.
Were you like that too as a kid? Was that something because you obviously were a musician for a minute, and didn't you manage Suede?
I did for a little while.
You know who lives out behind me? The dude Brett.
Say hello.
Are you guys friendly? Because my wife saw him.
Yeah.
She didn't know who he was.
Yeah,
and she's like, "I met this banker today." I was like, "Because he just moved out, and he always wears
he's always
creased and shit."
Yeah,
and
no,
he's in the middle of the country,
Yeah, no, he was sort of like a real dude when I met him. But I didn't do much for them. As soon as I stopped managing them, that's when they took off.
My radio producer, I said that we talked, and I fucked up the whole thing by not recording it. He was like, "Yeah, he used to manage Suede." I go, "What does that have to do with fucking anything?" My man just throws out random things. Like, I go, "Hey, you know, I was late to work today." He goes, "But you know, the Padres pitched a no-hitter yesterday." What the fuck does that have to do with anything?
Because he's thinking it.
He's just got some stuff, man.
Yeah.
I mean, with music, though, for me, I was an only child. My mom raised me, so it was like single mom thing. So I had to find an identity early on. That's what I got into music and started listening to great albums. And that was kind of for me, it taught me a little bit about spirituality before I actually knew what it was.
It's funny because I liked it before I analysed it, obviously. I don't know, you know, when you're a kid, you don't. But then I was in awe of it because I couldn't do it. So I wanted to learn guitar, and I got a guitar for 10 quid. I was about 13. And I tried to, but I only wanted to learn guitar to write a song.
Yeah.
I didn't want to learn guitar to play a song.
See, I didn't either. Later on, I learned how to play other people's stuff.
Yeah.
But the thing that really upset me was when I went to guitar lessons, they were like, "Mary had a little lamb." I was like, "No way. Just show me the physical."
That's right.
I put my finger somewhere.
Yeah, I need a chord. I need three chords. Yeah. And it's so funny. And I realized that probably I wanted, again, it was probably narcissism, because why did I want to write a song? Why? I don't think I really appreciated the creative process, other than I don't think I understood standing back and going, "I did that." I didn't want to write poetry and keep it in a drawer. Mm-hmm. I wanted to write poetry and show people it, and people said, "That's a fucking amazing poem." Mm-hmm. So there was still an element of that in it, and I think I know how I felt about Simon and Garfunkel and Cat Stevens and John Lennon. Mm-hmm. Thought, God. So I think, without thinking it, maybe I thought I could have a piece of that. Maybe one day someone might think of me like, I don't know.
Well, I remember hearing John Lennon saying something. He goes, "If I could have been a fisherman, I would have been a fisherman." And that stayed with me too, because it's one of those things where if I could have just, you know, stayed in the Marines and just been a good American and just been done my 20 years and then got a caravan somewhere, found a girl, had some babies, I would have done that, but I was compelled to do different shit.
Yes,
it was
I think that's
every time
it.
I thought I was in a place that I was like, "No, you're not. You got to keep moving." Is it like, you know?
Yeah, I mean, there is a certain amount of, we don't know what hole we're going to fall down. Yeah. Certainly with this career, no, this time, you know, you don't know where you're going. Anything can happen, and
but that's
hopefully
good, though, right?
I think so. Mm-hmm. I think it's good that you eventually find something that you love and you're good at, and you hold on to it. And I might get bored with this one day. I don't know what I'll do.
It's true, man. Now we can upgrade our bodies and stuff like that in the next couple of years. Check out Ray Kurzweil's book. It's trippy.
Okay.
Because it literally would change how human beings would be. You know, I mean, if you look at, we're talking about music, right? And how, like, some things are universal. You know, Cat Stevens. You listen to Cat Stevens. It's like that stuff will be good a couple hundred years.
I think so.
Certain things will be, right?
Well, I think that's true as well, and I think that's true. Outside science, art is one person telling the other person how they feel, or what day they had, or you want an ending. You know, I think in things like, you know, stories, you can have all the you know, the avatars and the Star Wars, but at the end of the day, it comes down to me telling you a story. You want to hear the ending, because we're caught up, we're storytellers, that's what we are. And, you know, and then add to that emotion, and you've got you're a winner, because we have empathy. They reckon the first joke, anthropologists think the first joke, right, was one...
Anthropologists are now chiming in on jokes.
Yes, they reckon that it was one caveman laughing at another caveman stubbing his toe. Because that caveman knew that that caveman didn't mean to do that.
Yeah.
And that's what's funny. Because we put ourselves in your position. Exactly. Yeah. There's still nothing funnier. Honestly, I don't care who you are. You see a guy in a bowler hat slipping a banana, you're never going to see anything funnier that day.
Yeah.
You know, it's just because that's how we're hardwired. We know that he didn't want to slip over that banana.
You know, like in certain circles, people call things high art.
Yeah.
Now, high art is still the same thing, but it would be a guy with a, you know, a gold plated banana, but it would still be that same joke.
Well, I think that when it comes down to it, if we're talking just comedy at its essence is an ordinary guy trying to do something he's not equipped to do.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what we're laughing at. That's what every sitcom, good, it's, and I think it comes down to empathy. It comes down to us putting ourselves, even if you take some, you know, like, I feel it now. I did it intuitively, but I think with David Brent, we're laughing at him because we're rooting for him.
Yeah, no, that's definitely true. I mean, I was rooting for you guys I told you, I watched the Brent movie when I went it the first time, and it was like the premiere day. Then I watched it again on the plane, come back from New York one time, and I was hoping he'd be better this time.
That's funny. I know.
I know. This one is like the director's cut.
We do. We want happy endings. Mm-hmm. We do want happy endings because we've put, whether we know it or not, we've put ourselves in that position.
Mm-hmm.
And as creators, right, we can make the world a slightly better place.
Now, do you think the thing is, when people talk about David Brent, right? Do you think that is like that's like a percentage of you there to a certain extent?
Of course,
yeah.
No, and all of us. I think that we create our own heroes and villains as role play for the soul, so no one really gets hurt.
Yeah.
And we, in unlike real life, we're not in charge of real life,
right?
We're not God. But when we create something, we are God, and we can make the good guy get the girl, and we can make the bad guy fall down.
Yeah.
And that's what we do. And it's just for other people to go through that process. And this is the other thing about art. If you're watching a film and you're crying, right,
mm-hmm.
you're crying.
Yeah.
You're not pretending to cry because the film's playing. You're crying.
Yeah, yeah.
It's real emotions. We hand people real emotions, right? And music... I don't know how he does it, but why does A minor make me cry? And
well,
and
D minor
C
is as well.
Intertwined. I asked Chris about that. He doesn't remember anything about the film, but he can play every song still.
I guess if like things like that that are really close to reality, like The Office was. Now these things, they like what were you calling contrived? Reality?
Oh, no, constructed reality.
Constructed reality.
Now
it's getting almost as if there's... It's kind of like music, I think, to a large extent, where you get... Now everybody can make a record because everybody has a computer or a smartphone.
Sure.
You know, and it kind of proliferates the good art, right? So you have to kind of almost like wade through a lot of stuff.
But art, for me, is never craft.
Yep.
Just like everyone... There are great drawers, and there are great people who are, but their piece of art can mean nothing.
Mm-hmm.
I see works of art, and I think, fucking art's amazing. It means nothing to me, because there's no art in it. There's just craft.
Yeah, well, same, Pollock or whatever, it's a style.
And just, like, someone, just someone doing scales, it's amazing.
Yeah.
It's juggling.
Yeah.
But where's the fucking emotions? What are you saying to me? You're not saying anything. You're telling me you can play piano.
Yeah.
Well, good luck to you. You know, it means nothing. There's nothing like an emotion.
Now, without I'm talking with emotion, like you're talking about films or art can move that.
Yeah.
Music can do that too in a lot of ways. And I think with a lot of people getting a shot to make music, I think we'll get more different stories. I think they'll still be true, you know?
I think so. And I still think there's only a certain percentage of excellence, right? Because most things are crap. Right, most tables are crap. Then you see one that's made by a master builder 400 years ago, and he put his life in it, and it can take
you sound like my wife pulling taps for the kitchen.
It can take your breath away. But I like anyone trying to do anything well with all their heart. I don't care whether it's a gardener or a fucking cabinet maker or a pianist. You know what? 95% of everything is okay, mediocre or shit, and it's that 5% you want to be in. You want to be in that gang, and you want to purchase that stuff, and you want to, and you know, some people don't even get the luxury to do that. But art is free. Art, you don't have to own a Rembrandt to know how amazing it is. It means nothing to me owning a Rembrandt. I can go and see it in a museum, and it can take my breath away.
Do you own any like records and stuff like that? Do you like a record collection?
I found all our records we had with a couple of years ago with the resurgence of vinyl, because I'd got rid of them for 20 years. You know, I still use the iPod on. I don't lug records around.
Yeah, I mean, I do DJ gigs with memory sticks now.
Yeah, of course, but no, there's nothing like it. I still, you know,
I think the kids nowadays, when I say kids, anybody under 30 really, is. I guess they don't look at, they look at art being free too, but music being free, you know?
And yeah.
It's really hard for musicians to try to make any money making music. So I think a lot of times you get less excellence in music because there's nothing to be made from it now.
Except you can't download going out to a live gig. Yeah. That's what you can't change. It's so funny, I think it was Warren Buffett that said, if you don't want people to steal your stuff, do stuff that can't be downloaded. He said, make chewing gum, which is great.
That's what I love.
That's great, isn't it?
I love his gems, man.
Yeah, no, but it's funny. I think of that. You always need a haircut.
Yeah,
you always need to wash. Mm-hmm. You always need to eat. You always there's things that you can't. You know,
I bought a garbage company when I got my record deal.
Did you really?
Yeah. Defontaine Carney.
That's so gangster, man.
Well, no, I had a friend.
That is so Sopranos.
Before The Sopranos. This is 93. And then The Sopranos came out, we were all like,
oh, that's great.
And we ended up selling it to Waste Management.
I'm in construction.
Yeah. But I had business cards that said Carney, Defontaine Carney, Special Room.
Yeah, do you have a trouble with the unions? Let me.
You never had any problems with the unions. But in New York, it was death, taxes, and garbage. If you wanted to get into some business, that's what it'd be. You'd be a politician or an accountant or a
perfect
garbage guy.
Yeah. That's perfect. Physical things that have to be changed and moved every day. We need to eat, breathe, clothe.
And Duke Ellington said that same thing, though. He said this: a record is just an approximate feeling of what it's like to be at a live event.
Yeah, of course. It's absolutely. But it's also, that's the truth as well. It is an event because so many people, they do wait and they buy the DVD and they watch it on telly. But it's when you get things saying, "People, I'm gutted. I can't go. My wife's ill." Mm-hmm. Or people say, "We met at your last gig. Mm-hmm. Me and my wife met." And I just think, well, you can't download that. That's a real thing. Yeah. And I think memories is all we have. When we're sitting in our bath chair and we're trying to remember our own name, we will remember beautiful things. Even if we can't do them anymore, we are our mind. Get me in that fucking robot.
Yeah.
I want to live forever.
Yeah, no, I'll get on it. I'll send you the book, man. I'll tell you what, thanks for hanging out, man.
Oh, it's great. It. No, did it record?
Yeah, I'm sure.
Imagine if it didn't.
I will fucking.
Oh, my God.
I'll be back next week.
No. Jesus Christ.
No, I think we recorded. The recording button was on and everything. Well, how'd you like my first podcast, y'all? I had a lot of fun making it and all the other cool episodes I got lined up for you. So like I promised up front, I got to remind you to rate and review Huey Off the Record and hit subscribe at your favorite podcast joint. Tell your friends, spread the word, and hit me up on social media. I'm at a Huey Morgan Official everywhere. On Twitter, I'm at Official Huey. And let me know what guests you want me to talk to here on the show. I can't guarantee anything. I only talk to peeps I want to talk to and how it works out. But in a postmodern, post-truth world, I'm keeping it real for y'all, keeping it old school, keeping it Huey.
You can also sign up at HueyMorgan.com to get all the latest on the pod, exclusive news, and I'm even going to throw some cool shit in. I got some dope merch. That's me. So be the first one to do that and get some stuff. Coming up next week, we've got my man, my brother, Tim Latham on the iPod. He's a Grammy Award-winning sound engineer. He's worked on all these joints, Wu-Tang Clan, De La, Tribe, and a band called Fun Loving Criminals, did all our records with us. And most recently, he's worked on that new musical, Hamilton, which he won a Grammy for as well last year. But for more on that, I'm proud to call him my friend and my brother. We go transatlantic on this one, me in my man cave in Somerset, and him in his man cave on Long Island outside of New York City. We get deep. Tim shares his experiences being an international sound pimp. That's his title. Yep, it's weird. But he's awesome, and he deserves it. And we also talk about the current state of music biz. You won't want to miss this one. So be sure to subscribe and get that next episode up on your device, and I'll catch you next time here on Huey Off the Record. Peace.
Cool fact, a crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Also, you can get health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. United Healthcare short-term insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for you. Learn more at uh1.com.